All right, welcome back, everybody. Good afternoon. It's June 2nd, 2025, 1:05 p.m. Back on the Silverview SEPA and Conditional Use Permit Appeals. Ms. Clungeon was doing her cross-examination of Mr. Miller, so we'll resume where we ended an hour ago. So go ahead, Ms. Clungeon.
Thank you. I was able to use that time to sort of scale this down, so hopefully it won't take that long. So I actually only have a couple more questions for Mr. Miller.
Oh, great.
Right.
Okay.
All right. Discussing parking lots. Let's turn to a little bit of discussion of open space. Would you agree that open space on a multi-unit residential project is beneficial to the residents?
Yes.
Okay. And in cases where parking is under the building and not in a surface lot, would that make more open space available to the residents?
Well, theoretically, yes, it would.
Okay.
However, not all of the parking will be under building.
Right. But placing more of the parking under building makes more space of it, open space available, correct?
Theoretically, yes.
Okay. Theoretically, but for this site, so if I setting aside whether you think that it's feasible, if a significant portion, maybe even half of the parking were put under the buildings, that would make more open space available to residents, correct?
Yes.
Okay. I want to dive a little bit into some of the cost discussion kind of toward the end of your testimony. I believe you referenced 60 to 70,000 per stall. And you mentioned that was from a contractor in Gig Harbor and somebody at Ryder Lovett. But I don't see any declarations or any information from either of them in the record. Is that correct? They provided no documentation of those numbers, correct?
No, they
Okay.
didn't.
And so there's no breakdown of those estimates. We don't know how much is foundation, how much is ventilation, anything like that, right?
We don't know the specific numbers, but what I'll tell you is from my experience, excuse me, in dealing with White's construction or GLY construction or Ryder Lovett Bucknell or other cost estimators, the in a feasibility study, you're going to get numbers that are accurate within a range, which is what the $60,000 to $70,000 number was. And that's good enough to think about for feasibility until you drill into it more. But those numbers are accurate.
Okay, but there's no, we don't have any detail. Those are just estimates, right? Those are ballpark. Those are estimates from other people provided to you, correct?
They are estimates from other people provided to me. However, I also have had those numbers in previous projects where the cost of parking under building was approaching $60,000 or $70,000 per
Okay.
car.
So for example, in the Issaquah continuing care where you had parking under the building for the 10 story, do you have any data about the cost per stall for that parking?
Well, it's a little bit old, but I don't have it off the top of my head. But
Okay.
I would say that for phase one, which was completed in 2008, that parking cost, I believe, was about 45,000 ca per stall.
Okay.
So that's 17 years ago.
And how many subgrade levels of underground parking were in that building?
It was two, I believe.
Two. Okay. And does having kind of more levels of it make it more expensive? More levels of underbuilding parking? As
Yeah.
opposed to all one level spread out.
It does in certain respects because if you're going down deeper, you may end up needing to create shoring behind the building. And what shoring is basically stabilizing the vertical cut that you're doing, because you're going deeper. You're going deeper, so you're going to be required to have more structural integrity on that wall, and the shoring allows you to do that excavation.
Okay.
You're likely to have more dewatering or water proofing of that back wall. But other aspects of it are kind of a push. Like once you introduce an elevator, whether it goes down one more level is not a significant impact to cost, you know, because the cost of the elevator is the cost of the elevator. So serving one more floor isn't going to be a big deal. If you're below grade and you're ventilating two floors versus one floor, it's probably not a huge upgrade and or uptick in cost to do two versus one.
Okay. But in general, multi-stories of underbuilding parking will be more expensive than a single story of the same square footage, right?
Right, but it's not going to be two times more.
Okay. Okay. And then I want to talk a little bit about your comments on the WGI study that provided per stall parking based in Seattle. And you discussed there were some caveats, right? You know, those if it's a flat site with no encumbrances. Small parking spaces, shallow footings, and no below grade construction. And I just kind of want to dive in a little bit here about say there wasn't parking underneath the building. There is still below grade excavation that will happen at this project, correct?
It's minimized, but yes.
Okay. And there would also, for this subgrade, say it were apartment units instead of parking. So we would still have to do excavation. Would there still have to be retaining walls?
There would be one.
Okay.
Well, one on the uphill side.
And okay.
Probably the retaining wall steps down on the either end of the building.
Okay. And there would still have to be features in place for dewatering, correct?
You would have to probably put some sort of waterproof membrane on the uphill side, but the deeper you go, the more likely you are to have water. So
right, but this we're already talking about putting some of the building under the grade that would need to be dewatered, right?
It would need to have waterproofing on the back.
Waterproofing. Side. Okay. All right. But so those are all features that are already baked into the design, right?
The idea that you would have to waterproof the backside of the foundation is, yes.
Okay. And then also the excavation, right? We still have below grade excavation.
Yeah, because you're cutting you know, one story out of it.
Right. And then we still have retaining walls, right? So is it possible that, if those costs are already baked into the design, is there any information or data about how much more it would be in order to have that be subgrade or under building parking as opposed to the units? Is there any data on that?
Well, look, in order to do this, you're going to be exposed on the west side and you're going to go east, right? So when you go from the west side and you go east, whether it's 45 feet or 66 feet or whatever, you're going way more than the 39 and a half feet in width. You're almost doubling the amount of space that you have to push to the east. So maybe you pull the garage a little bit to the west to bring it out of grade even more.
Okay.
You're still pushing into that hillside deeper. So now you're cutting higher on the slope, right? So You know, I think what you're trying to say is, you know, did we look at the cost of the parking and strip out the cost of the other? But it's going to be, it's not an apples to apples comparison, because you have to push deeper into the slope in order to get the required parking. The other thing is that I think in Mr. Adams' exhibit, he showed 40 cars. We need to park more than 40 cars under those buildings. You know, the 40 unit building doesn't equate to 40 cars. It equates to about 60 cars. So you're going to end up going deeper by a matter of probably 1.5 or 2 stories for the parking.
So, does the Silverdale design standards, to your knowledge, does it say that all parking has to be for a site?
I'm pretty sure it does that. I can go, I got it right here. I'll read it to you if you'd like. And I don't have this, you know, committed to memory, but it says parking. It doesn't say all parking, but it says parking will be under building where feasible for multi-unit buildings. So as the architect, I'm going to say, well, that means all parking, because it doesn't say 50% of parking. It doesn't say 20% of parking. It says parking. So that's what I have to interpret, I guess.
All right. So you're interpreting it as all parking. Okay.
Well, but I think the hearing examiner, and he can correct me if I'm wrong, suggested in his remand that some portion of the parking that's allocated to visitor parking could be on site. I don't know what that is. Mm-hmm. I don't know how many stalls that is.
Okay. Would you agree that even putting, in this case, so 40, so if you were to put, let's see what percentage of it, even putting half of the building or half of the parking under the buildings would be more consistent with the design standards than no parking under the buildings, right?
No. It's the
where. So is it your position that if we can't put all of the parking under the building, that, hold on. If we can't put all of the parking under the building, we can put none of the parking under the building?
That's not what the design standard says. The design standard says parking shall be under building. Parking shall be under building.
Okay. Is it possible that a portion of the parking could be more feasible to put under the building than all of the parking?
Yeah, I guess that you're not, that's right. Not what the standard says.
But if the standard says parking under the building where feasible, and if it could be feasible to put some of the parking under the building, wouldn't that be consistent with the design standard?
I don't believe it would.
Okay. For the estimate of the $60,000 to $70,000, this is just to confirm, that does not take into account any of the existing work that would need to be done on the site, right? That's it doesn't factor that in, correct?
You mean like
excavation, foundations, dewatering, waterproofing, all that sort of stuff. That 60 to 70 is assuming that that's not already done, correct?
I'm not sure. Can you reword that for me?
Sure. The $60,000 to $70,000 estimate that's here for that you testified about for the parking. Does that estimate include things like excavation, foundation, dewatering for the parking?
Yes, I believe it would. And also all of the other aspects that are required, mm-hmm. which would be the additional columns, the additional shear wall, transfer beams, the mechanical ventilation of the garage if you needed it, all the screening, all the landscaping. Yes. So,
okay. And do you know what portion of that $60,000 or $70,000 estimate is for excavation, retaining walls, dewatering?
Okay. I don't know that. I mean, again, we're talking about feasibility here.
Yeah.
And when we talk about feasibility, we're getting information that we feed into the idea of the feasibility matrix, right? So when I have a contractor tell me it's going to cost $63,000 per car, and I need to park, say, 100 cars, then I know how much that's going to cost.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but if...
And it's a premium, and you know that's a premium on top of parking on the surface.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk a little bit about the surface. So surface parking is also, there's a cost to that as well, correct?
There is.
Okay. And so less surface parking, some of those costs could be saved and transferred to the underbuilding parking, right?
Theoretically, but the issue you're going to deal with now is when you take the cars off site, as you said earlier, we're going to need to landscape that. And so it's going to be, you have an additional landscaping cost, irrigation cost. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm sure that it's probably cheaper to landscape it than it is to park it, but you still have costs involved if you eliminate the parking on site.
But those landscape areas would also have utility to the residents, right? As open space on the site.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I just wanted to clarify, you referenced some studies and some articles that aren't in the record, but about parking cost, how parking costs are forcing people out of certain areas. Do you recall that testimony?
Yep.
Was that because of parking fees at apartment buildings, or was it based on costs that were built into the rent? Do you recall if those articles distinguished?
I believe it was the additional cost built into the rent because of the parking that was required. In this case, it was structured parking.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it was, mm-hmm. I believe it was built into the rent.
Okay. Is it common that for multi-unit apartment buildings that there can be parking fees, you know, if somebody wants one of the parking spots under the building, that they pay additional money for those spots?
I think it would depend on the situation, because if let's just say if you have a higher end condominium and you have parking on site and parking under building, you can probably charge an additional premium for the parking under building. But for the type of housing we're talking about, it would push people away.
Okay.
The additional costs would push people away.
Okay. Are you aware that there are other residential building projects very close by that have parking under the building?
I'm aware of a few, yeah.
Okay. Is North Beach, the North Beach project, one of them? Are you familiar with that project?
North Beach project is a project that was just approved, I guess, by the hearing examiner. Mm-hmm. It's not built.
Okay, but it approved. I'll go into that later. No, it's not. All right. In your testimony, you said, you know, that basically you thought that parking under this building or parking under building is not feasible for this type of building. Is that accurate?
It is accurate for this type of building and okay. I believe for this site.
Okay. But could you redesign or design buildings that would have parking under the building that would be feasible on this site?
You would have to push the building higher or push the parking lower. The height would get up to the potential height limit or exceed it. You would be impacting potentially the aquifer, and you would be putting an additional cost on the building.
Okay.
So again, I don't, my belief is it is not feasible for this building or for another apartment building, maybe double loaded corridor, that's trying to gain the same rents on this site.
But again, you were not asked to provide a different type of design. You, correct?
The only thing that I was asked to do was to look at, the exhibit, I don't know which one it is, that has the double loaded corridor that Innova architects and engineers developed. I had some input on that.
Was it? Sorry, you said there was a double loaded corridor design?
It's an exhibit in this hearing.
Okay, so one of the alternatives.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. I see. Okay. And when you say, to build on the site that in a way that would be feasible, it would have to go higher, right? Is that based on the assumption that you're trying to keep the same number of units on the site?
Yeah, if you put parking under the building
mm-hmm.
and you're trying to stay out of the aquifer,
mm-hmm.
then it looks to me like you're going to have at least one level of parking, maybe one and a half levels of parking that are kind of sticking up above grade. And that's actually what Mr. Adams' exhibit showed. It showed the parking deck for the two-level parking out of grade on both sides, east and west, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So then you're pushing the building up higher. Yes.
Okay. But again, that's assuming that you keep the same number of units or the number of levels of the of
same
residential
unit count.
Units yeah. on top of the building, correct?
Same unit count, yeah.
Okay. Would it be possible to reduce the number of units?
Well, then it becomes an even harder mathematics question relative to the feasibility of the project. So mm-hmm. I would say no.
Okay. But fewer units would mean, it would also require, mean fewer cars, right?
But it doesn't work with pro forma.
Okay. Okay, and are you aware that the design standards instruct building in this waterfront district to go up instead of out?
Well, we're a four-story building. I mean,
what's that?
It's a four-story building. It is up.
Right. Well, do you know what the height limit is in this for this zone?
55 feet, I think.
Okay, and what is the height of the proposed building?
I believe as it's measured by the measurement process, I think it's like 32 feet.
Okay. So it is below the height threshold for this zone.
Purposefully, okay. Yeah. I mean, it's below because there's a balance here, right?
Mm-hmm.
of how you look at the site. And again, this gets back into goals and the goals for the project and also the feasibility. If you go higher, you're impacting more of the neighbors, right? If you keep, I see the four-story building with its thin profile sitting on the contours of this site, just the way it is a really nice balance between all aspects of the neighborhood. It's not too high. It's, you know, it's almost Goldilocks, right? You see all these ads about Goldilocks on TV. It's not too high. It's not too thick. You know, it doesn't impact the aquifer. And that's why I keep coming back to the fact that I think this project, designed the way it is the right approach on this site, given the other aspects of the site.
Okay, but the design the way it is has all surface parking, right?
Because it's infeasible to put parking under the building.
And do you know how many spaces that is? How many spaces of parking?
I believe it's 250 or something like that.
Okay, 250. And are you aware that the design standards encourage minimizing that visual impact of the parking, that the design standards want parking in this district to kind of be hidden away, to kind of be in rear, behind buildings, rear sides, or under the building, right?
Side or rear yard, yeah.
Right. So if we have the intent and the language of these design standards that are supposed to kind of put parking where it's not as visible, that basically the sea of surface parking on this site is not necessarily consistent with the intent of that waterfront design standard.
But I think it is, because you've landscaped the perimeter of the site. You've put up visual barriers. Like, look at Maynard's parking lot. You know, it's all surface parking, and I think that's fine because it's a restaurant. They've got landscaping along the southern edge of their property with big fir trees that are going to grow two or three times larger than they are right now, that already block what you would see from them. And then the downhill properties are not going to see the cars because of the landscaping and fencing that is being done by the developer.
Is there anywhere in the waterfront design standards that say that if you provide landscaping that you don't have to put the change the location of the parking?
Say that again. I'm sorry.
Is there anything in the design standards that says that the parking, the location of the parking, the configuration of the parking can be different if you landscape it a certain way?
No, it says to be inside a rear yard, but landscaping is
under the building.
Or feasible, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But landscaping is not part of that.
Screening is, yeah. I'd have to go back and look. You know, I haven't looked at the landscaping requirements, but you cannot just not landscape.
Okay. But there's nothing in there saying that you can put the parking in the front of the building if you buffer it with vegetation, right?
I would have to go look.
Okay. All right. Correct me if I've already asked this, but would you agree that renters might pay more for a building with an elevator?
Yeah, you already asked that.
Okay. And yeah, okay. All right. I think I am at the end. I think those are all my questions. Thank you, Mr. Miller.
Okay. Mr. Miller, before we get to Mr. Wachter's cross, I had just a couple questions to follow up while it's fresh on our mind from Ms. Clenchon's questioning. I'm trying to ask it in a different way. In terms of the cost per stall, which was $60,000 to $70,000, I mean, is that the added cost as a net increase in building costs if you switch from the surface parking to the under building parking? Or would you do offsets like the money you save on not putting in the surface parking and already doing the foundation work?
So it's a nuanced question and answer, but here's what I believe the answer is. You get a cost estimate. Let's just say I get a cost estimate from a contractor or cost estimator, and I don't have any underbuilding parking. But I'm going through my feasibility study, and I realize that instead of what I thought I could get on site, I can't actually accommodate. So now I'm pushed into either reducing the size of the building or pushing parking under the building. The number that they give you, I think, is the premium that you have for putting that parking under the building. So yeah, there may be some trade-off on excavation and things like that, but it's an additive cost to putting parking under the building.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
That is my belief.
Okay. Got it. Thanks. That's helpful. All right. Mr. Wachter, any cross? And you're muted, Mr. Wachter. There we go.
Hi, Mr. Examiner. It's my last name is pronounced Wachter. It rhymes
with Doctor. Wachter. Okay.
Sorry. It rhymes with doctor, if that's of any use.
Okay. Got it.
So, I'm, of course, I'm going to be skipping around, as is the nature. I'll do my best to keep it rolling. You asked the very question that I was going to pose, whether the $60,000 to $70,000 per space was a net change that would be expected. So Mr. Miller, good afternoon. I'm Neil Wachter on behalf of the county. I have a few questions as follow-up for you. The Issaquah project that you discussed, if I recall correctly, it was a 10-story building with two levels of understructure parking. Is that correct?
Yes.
And was the understructure parking underground, or did it occupy the first two floors, or was it a mix?
Well, as I said, the site sloped down about 50 feet. So it was underground on the uphill side and underground on the lowest level on the downhill side, with the upper level, I think, exposed on only one side. We didn't have enough exposure to eliminate mechanical ventilation of the garage. We have a big mechanical ventilation ductwork system that pulled exhaust out of the garage. But we did use the one exposed wall, and I'm going from memory now because this is quite a while ago, to help us with fresh air coming into the building.
With the Issaquah project, did you have any shallow aquifer issues to confront or address?
That's a good question. There was not an aquifer that was designated or that was defined. But what I can tell you is that during construction, we had a rain event that water did get under the lowest level of the garage slab. It wasn't an aquifer, it was stormwater that we had to go in and remediate some of the structure and plumbing, below grade plumbing and things like that under the garage. It was an unexpected event, let me put it that way.
As you probably can appreciate, this concept of feasibility could be perceived in a couple of different ways. I heard you talk about issues regarding feasibility of using the land, feasibility from a market standpoint, feasibility from a construction cost standpoint. In your field, are those, would you say, that kind of the three primary considerations of feasibility, or is market and construction costs sort of two sides of the same coin?
Well, market and if you miss the market, so if they build, you know, if you miss the market with what you're building, then you're likely to have a project that's not going to do well, you know. So, you know, an example would be if you overbuilt the level of finishes in this a building and it costs too much, and you only can get, because of your location, you can only get a certain amount of rent or buy or purchase price, then you've missed the market. So, you know, market is one thing, cost is another, but they do feed into each other. You know, the cost of the building has to be consistent with the market and the goals and the goals of the client.
And I heard you talk about the pro forma that you use for projects like these. I assume there was a pro forma for this project, correct?
Well, there's an old one, yeah. When the project was first established, back, you know, 6 or 7 or 8 years ago, there was a pro forma.
Okay, is that something you consulted in the process of evaluating feasibility now at this juncture?
No, it's old. It's out of date. It would need to be redone.
Okay. Do you believe that feasibility should account for the question of aesthetics in terms of how a, say, under building parking would look to the outside or to a neighboring property?
Well, that's kind of a hard question to answer. I believe that feasibility in this case is the cost of the project of putting the cost of putting under building parking under this building on this site, the potential of impacting the aquifer, and, you know, aesthetics are important. You know, you want to have a building that you can rent. So if I'm driving up to this building and I see, you know, a 10 or 8 to 10 foot tall wall, you know, even though it's architecturally, you know, detailed nicely and maybe has nice finishes on it or whatever, it's still somewhat of a blank wall. Or maybe it's got windows behind it that show the inside of a parking garage. But anyway, the aesthetics of that are not as consistent and nice as the aesthetics of, you know, the project that is being proposed. So in that respect, yeah, I would say that aesthetics does impact feasibility because it could impact the desirability to live there.
You're of course speaking in some generalities there, because there could be some subjectivity to how a wall like that is perceived. Some people would simply say, well, that's just part of what they had to do to build the building. Some people would say, yeah, that reminds me of a prison yard, right?
Well, right, okay. Yeah, everything's in terms of aesthetics, I think, is subjective.
Okay. How about the question of open space? Do you believe that would be any, does that factor into any kind of feasibility analysis in your field?
Only in the sense that it's, you have to be able to match the open space requirement of the zoning code or any other jurisdictional requirement. Although, you know, open space, the reason jurisdictions ask for and require open space is for people to use.
Okay, so bear with me as I look through my notes. I heard a term, speaking of the corridor in the instance of there being an elevator added to any given apartment structure, I think I heard the term said in a couple of different ways. At one point, I thought I heard double corridor, and I don't know that that's correct. Is the phrase double walled or double loaded corridor correct?
Yeah, double loaded corridor. So what that means, you go down a hotel corridor and you got rooms on both sides, right?
Right.
That's what the term double loaded corridor refers to. You're loading the right side and the left side.
Is that where the shear walls are that you were referring to in that kind of construction setup?
Well, let's talk about shear walls. So right now, today's code, the seismic codes have gotten much more strict as time goes on, as we learn more about earthquakes. And so early on in my career, the walls between residential units were wood studs and gypsum wall board with no plywood sheathing or anything like that on them. Shear walls would be the exterior walls, maybe the elevator core if you had them, or stairway walls, and the corridor walls. Today's code, what I've seen are every demising wall, or maybe almost every demising wall, the walls between units have plywood on at least one side, maybe both sides. And actually, this is a better question for our structural engineer, but let me try and answer it. The corridor wall would also have plywood on one side or both sides. And the exterior wall, by its nature, has plywood on it anyway. So I'm going to venture to say that 75% of the walls in this building have some shear capability to them. The other thing that we're adding now to buildings in the last 10 years are what's called hold down rods. And for instance, the building I did in Gig Harbor for a retirement community had hold down rods that went from the parking garage lid, the concrete lid, all the way up to the fifth floor. There were threaded rods and they have big bolts on them. And that's to keep the building from going like this. Basically, you're putting tension on it so that it's not going to tip over when that earthquake happens. So the combination of shear walls and the hold down rods and other structural devices are what keep that building in place. And that's getting at the essence of what I was talking about with the additional structure that's required in a parking structure underneath a building like this, because that shear and the vertical gravity loads have to be taken down through that structure and dispersed out into the earth during an earthquake.
Okay, thank you. That's sort of where I was going with my questions. You almost had me check a couple of boxes on my list. I guess it's to say, given the increasingly stringent seismic standards, does the additional cost per stall, is that a figure that is increasing greater than, say, the rate of inflation or for the cost of building materials or construction? It's a compound question. I can break it down.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. Anytime a code changes and gets more stringent, the cost of construction is going to go up, especially with structural elements. You know, we have structural elements. We have the energy code, which we really haven't talked about because I guess maybe it doesn't make any difference, but we got structural, we have energy, we have mechanical codes, we have ventilation requirements now. We have rain screen systems, all of those things that have come up, you know, and then, if you want to get into sustainability, I guess that's the Washington Energy Code, but if you're building a LEED building, you know, so every time you layer more on top of a building, it's more code on top of a building, the cost is going to go up. However, when the state of Washington, I think, wisely reduced the parking requirement, they did that so they could reduce cost for constructing this type of housing.
So one of the other attorneys screen shared a couple of the photos that had been collected by Mr. Adams for his report. And I think I noticed that at least in one of them, the staircase, the stairwell was sort of to the side of the structure. In other words, it wasn't incorporated into the body of the structure, if that makes sense.
Yep, I saw that.
So in considering feasibility for an apartment structure such as this, if one had to go to an elevator scheme with interior corridors, would the stairwells be incorporated into the structure, or could they be sort of outside of it like we saw in those images?
Well, if I were designing it, the stairways would be interior to the last unit of the building, so that the last unit of the building could have more opportunity for windows and not be, those windows wouldn't be blocked. So from a functional point of view, I would pull the stairways into the core of the building, probably, again, it would depend on the layout, but one or two units inboard from the end walls on either end. And you wouldn't, they would not be an architectural piece like sticking out like that image showed. The reason for the stairways on that image, I believe they could have been done differently, but they were accessing exterior walkways in front of the units, which again, I wouldn't do in this case.
Right. And I also wondered in this scenario of a building with elevators and corridors, you mentioned elevator lobbies. Wouldn't you also expect there to be an entrance lobby for each of those buildings in order to, with a secured door?
Yes, you would have. So if you put an elevator in all four of those buildings, so you got four elevators or more, but I think in this case, one elevator would be enough for these. Or possibly it's two buildings, I don't know. Anyway, so you've got multiple elevators, and wherever you have an elevator, you're gonna have a space up on the residential floor that could be classified as an elevator lobby. It may be need to be protected depending on the fire rating of the system, in some manner. So it might have to be enclosed. It doesn't have to be, but it could be. And then on the main level, you would have a lobby that would probably have other aspects to it, like, mailboxes and stuff like that. And then in each level of a parking garage, you would have to have an enclosed elevator lobby as a separation between the parking garage and the elevators, elevator shaft.
And I'm going to loop back to the aesthetic question one last time. If we were to subtract the question of aesthetics from your evaluation of feasibility, does that change your evaluation in any tangible way?
No, my evaluation of this feasibility question has to do with cost, the aquifer, the height of the building, the imposition of putting a parking garage on the site. That's where I come to the conclusion that it's not feasible.
Okay, thank you. Those are all of my questions.
Okay, Mr. Schatz, back to you for your redirect.
Thank you, Mr. Examiner, just a couple. Mr. Miller, we looked at an exhibit that had 40 stalls under the building that was provided by Mr. Adams. In that scenario where part of the parking is under the building, there would still have to be surface parking, is that right?
Yes, because 40 cars doesn't cover the required amount of parking that we would need for the apartments.
So you would have larger, uglier, you know, concrete parking structures, bigger building because of elevators, and still have surface parking?
If you only had 40 cars under the building. I think there were two exhibits. One was one story and one was two stories.
With the two stories, one of the levels is above grade.
Yes. Which makes it less aesthetic.
If you were to put part of the parking under the building, would that resolve, you know, the issues that we've talked about with regard to stairs or with regard to bigger buildings if elevators are required, or the issue of costs? Would it resolve any of those things?
Could you repeat that one more time?
Yeah, that was kind of, I said a bunch there. If you were to put part of the parking under the building, would that resolve the issue that you've raised as to elevators making the upper part of the building much bigger and a much different project?
Well, you know, I'm not sure how to answer, because if you put part of the parking under the building, if it's in a parking garage, which I think it would have to be, then I would add the elevator and, you know, and to get up into the apartment house part of the building. Otherwise, you're going to walk, you know, up a stairway or outside to get into your apartment. So, and then, you know, the other thing is the issue of all resident parking being under the building triggers the other part of the ADA code for van parking, and then with the elevator.
Okay. So if you put part of the parking into the building, you'd still have to have the elevator and all that comes with an elevator.
I would put the elevator in, yes.
Open space came up. Do you know if the project is currently meeting open space requirements?
I believe it exceeds the open space requirement, but I don't know exact numbers.
Okay. it was talked about that elevators may add value to a building. Isn't it true that a lot of things would add value to a building? Like a gym, high-end appliances to the units, et cetera. But does that make it affordable?
Again, what you're talking about is how much rent you can charge for, you know, having an elevator or having nice appliances or, you know, marble countertops and things like that. You have to balance that with what's the amount of rent you can charge in Silverdale for a non-waterfront site, you know, with, you know, okay views, good views, but, you know, you have to balance that. So, you know, I don't know how to answer the question.
That's fine. I guess the question really is, you know, does adding amenities, it may add value to the building, but does it mean that people are going to pay for the added cost far as rent?
So I don't know. It may add value to the building, but people may not want to pay that because they can go to another apartment that's maybe more affordable for them. And again, go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm sorry.
Well, a lot of what was talked about in your cross was, you know, what's possible on the site. And, you know, in your opinion, you know, does possible equal feasible in all situations?
No.
So something could be possible, but it's not feasible.
Yeah, a lot of things are potentially possible, but, you know, if you can't afford, you know, the cost may make it infeasible, or the physical characteristics of accomplishing what's possible may make it infeasible. I mean, there are a lot of reasons why something can be infeasible but still be possible.
Lastly, there was a talk about, well, could you possibly, you know, design a double corridor, dual corridor with underbuilding partner? Is it possible? But if you were to do that, I think your answer was, I'm sorry if you already said this, but that doesn't get you around the aquifer issue or all the other issues you raised today, does it?
Right, it doesn't. You know, you're still putting underbuilding parking, which is going down, you know, deeper into the hillside.
Okay. I think that's all I have. Thanks.
Okay. Mr. Miller, I had another question for you. When we were briefing the feasibility issue at the last hearing, part of the county response was, well, we don't typically require this of other projects, so we shouldn't of this. And my response to that was, well, if you don't require it of this project, which project would you do that for? Because this project is lots larger than most other ones and involves more storage. So, I mean, what kind of projects would it be feasible to have structured parking then? Would it be, you know, maybe the high end waterfront projects, or, you know, what, I mean, does this regulation have any meaning at all, or is it just going to be inapplicable in every case?
I think the only way that, I don't know why the Silverdale design standards were written with what I consider to be kind of ambiguous language. There's no definition for feasibility. You know, they don't tell you how to interpret that word. They also don't tell you who will interpret that word. So from an architect's point of view, it's a really difficult thing to work through. And I think that, well, I know that on this project, the feasibility, I believe it was discussed about the parking, and parking on this site was, there was an agreement between the county, I believe, and the developer to take 80 cars off the site and use vouchers for transit because it's a transit-oriented site. So, but to answer your question, I think the only way that I would see feasibility is if you can offset the cost of developing the parking, that $60,000 per stall, by charging, you know, all or some reasonable amount of that cost back to whoever is renting or buying the unit. You know, that's about the, I mean, it doesn't make sense otherwise, especially the only other way it makes sense is if you have a very tight, compact site and you can't get all the parking on surface.
Yeah. Okay. That's a good point. All right. Thank you, Mr. Miller. I guess I should ask, did any of the attorneys have questions given my question? No. Okay. You're good. All right. Mr. Miller, thank you very much. You had to sit through quite a long time of this questioning, and you survived it. So, yeah, enjoy the rest of your day.
All right.
Mr. Schutz, next witness.
Thank you, Mr. Examiner. Next witness is Paul McCormick.
Okay. Ms. Jones will bring him up, I'm sure.
You should see him on your screen in just a few seconds.
Okay. All right, Mr. McCormick, welcome back. Let me swear in. Just raise your right hand. Do you swear affirm to tell the truth, nothing but the truth in this proceeding?
I do.
Okay, great. All right, Mr. Schutz, go ahead.
Thanks. For the record, could you give the name, your name and address for the...
Yeah, Paul McCormick, Nova Architects. Address is 950 Pacific Avenue, Suite 450, Tacoma, Washington.
And as the examiner had said, welcome back. You testified in the last hearing, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And again, I probably ask you the same as I did Mike P. To give a for the record, give your education and experience, but you know, understanding the examiner has heard it before. We don't need to go too deep into it, but if you could do that for us right now, that'd be great.
Okay. Yeah, I am the owner of Inova Architects. I've spent most of my life designing on the architectural side of projects, but I am educated and licensed as a civil and structural engineer from University of Washington. Graduated from University of Washington. Started working in 1990, so I've been working for 35 years in the practice and profession of the business that we're in, designing buildings. So we've done a number of housing projects. We work for private clients in Western Washington. We also are contracted continuously with the federal government, and we do housing for the federal government throughout the United States as well.
Okay. And is structured parking, is that something you come across in part of your work?
Yes. Okay. And we do. I mean, we've done structured parking. We do a number of projects that are not structured parking as well, where they're okay. Not feasible.
So feasible, is that something that you also consider when you're, you know, starting a project, working on a project, looking at the structural engineering of a project?
Yeah, I mean, every project. We did that on this project. I mean, so we did a pretty in-depth feasibility study at the beginning of this project. I mean, so we started this project in 2017. So in 2017, we did the feasibility study for this project. And we take into account, you know, all the things we're talking about right now. I mean, we took into account, you know, the comprehensive goals for Silverdale, the Silverdale design standards. We take into account the building codes, you know, for a project, what would be required for access and egress of the building. We look at the environmental restraints of the site, whether it's got wetlands, aquifer. We take into account the views and the heights, the massing of the building and its impact and sensitivity to the neighbors and the adjacent uses. And we work that all into concepts then that will most well fit all of those different components and constraints on the project and the site. And then we look at the financial feasibility of what it will take to make all those elements be satisfied, and can it be done in a way that's financially feasible so a project can actually move forward. So we did that in 2017, and it's the reason why we wound up with the project that we have without structured parking, even though there is that part of the design standards that ask for structured parking to be under the building. It was also competing with some of the other standards that ask us to be sensitive to the adjacent uses. And we should remember that this site has two very unique things that are specific to this site that are not specific to other sites in the same zoning, and that is that we have the aquifer to deal with, and that we're also at the edge of the zoning. So we're right up against a different zoning on the other side of our property, which is the single family residence. So when we're looking at the design standards, we had to take that into account, is that we have to be sensitive to the fact that we are at the edge of the zoning and we have single family residence next to us. So there's sometimes competing and almost conflicting standards where it asks you to put parking under the building, which would necessitate two stories of structured parking, which makes a four-story building become a six-story building. And then you're competing with a much more massive building and higher building that then is adversely impacting other standards in the Silverdale's design standards that says be sensitive to the adjacent uses in terms of all those things, massing, height, size, view. So those were all the things that we did in our financial feasibility study in 2017, which drove us to the project that we have right now, which is the garden style project without the structured parking under the building. And we worked with the county on that, and also with Kitsap Transit, as to why would that be justified? Why would that be justified when the Silverdale design standard says put structured parking under the building? And all of us, between the county and Kitsap Transit and us, determined that, again, it was better addressing some of the other standards to be sensitive to the neighbors in terms of massing and size and height. And it's also why it was proposed by us, by the county, to work with Kitsap Transit to actually eliminate 80 stalls required on the site. So rather than putting 80 stalls under the building, we just omitted 80 stalls and instead are providing transit passes. So it was the sort of between the county and us and Kitsap Transit was the way to mitigate that part of the code that said put structured parking under the building. We actually are promoting public transit instead of those 80 stalls, which again, go ahead.
Let me ask you this. So it was part of the project on remand, because structured parking, I mean, feasibility of underbuilding parking did come up at the last hearing, but it may not have been fleshed out, explained, and the record may not have been created to the extent necessary. Was part of this remand process to explain and show what you say you already sort of contemplated, which is that underbuilding, you know, parking is infeasible on the site?
Yeah, so we went back and went through that analysis again and documented that for this process, for this remand, right? Okay. So we put together that feasibility study now.
Okay, and we were contributor to that feasibility study?
I was.
Okay. And in looking at that in the feasibility, did you look at several, I mean, what did you look at to determine that it was infeasible, that you say maybe hadn't done before, or that hadn't been, you know, clearly explained in the record up to this point?
Well, there's two or three things that make it not feasible. One is the aquifer, because no matter how we slice it, no matter how we do it, it is putting structured parking will go deeper with bigger, heavier foundations and deeper into that ground. There's no way to do it without.
Let me get this, because we heard from Mike Miller some, and he deferred to some degree to you as a structural engineer. So can you provide a bit more explanation as to why that would be the case?
Okay. Right now, the way the building is currently proposed, there's 8 foot clear height in that lower unit because it's a residential living unit. Once we turn that lower unit into a garage, we can't have an 8 foot clear height. It's going to have to get deeper, right? So the vans for ADA accessibility, which have to be made accessible into that garage, you can't build a garage for everybody else and exclude ADA people from needing to get in there, right? So we need an 8 foot two van to get in there. So the clear height of that garage will go up because the structural beams will be about 2 foot dimensional beams that will hold up the concrete floor that holds up the rest of the four story building on top of it. And those, so we're going to be adding height to the structure, right? So then later we'll talk about, well, do you have to go down or can you go up? But first of all, let's just talk about what is the height increase that we're creating by going with structured parking. We're going to add 2 foot deep beams, which is an addition to what was there before, because it was just a flat ceiling for residential living units. So we're going to add 2 foot deep beams. And then below those beams, we have sprinkler pipes and 4-inch diameter drain pipes for all the sewer pipes. That's all the four stories above that. And those hang on hangers down below those beams. And those pipes between the hangers and the pipes take up, you know, between a half a foot and a foot of depth. And then they slope at 2% slope because they're sewer drain pipes. And even across just 50 feet, that's a 1 foot drop as well. So you have two more feet in that space below the 2 foot beams in order to accommodate all the sprinkler pipes and all the drain pipes for the building above it. So that takes up 4 extra feet. And then at the bottom of the building, we will have 2 foot deeper footings because they will be massively bigger footings. It's about 12 million pounds of concrete that will be in the garages, right? By building these two levels of parking, we're adding 12 million pounds of concrete. So we're going to have 2 foot deep, bigger beams than we had before. So altogether, we're adding 6 feet to the structure of that lower garage. And the reason that will go down into the ground is because we have to get into the garage. So even on the upper side, if we have a lower level garage and an upper level garage, the upper level garage has to be able to drive in, right? So we have to match the grades that we have. And yet we're adding 6 feet depth to that lower garage. So it will go down into the ground 6 more feet. If you raise it 6 feet, you won't be able to get into the upper garage because now you're 6 feet above ground for the upper garage. So the only way you could not do that is put ramps, which is a whole, we don't have a site outside of our buildings to put ramps. And if you put ramps inside the building, there's no room. It'd have to be a much, much bigger building than we have. So we need concepts for this feasibility showing if we don't have ramps and we have two levels of parking garage, we are going to impact a 6 foot deeper cut into the aquifer. And that's the only way to make it work with the grades that we have with this particular building. It's just an impact that would be there. Now, if you said, how do you push that up? Well, if you just push that whole building up, because that was one of the responses, I think, from Adams, is you don't have to go down, you can go up. Well, the garden style property project that we have right now can't go up and meet code. I can't even push it up 2 more feet and meet code. Because as we demonstrated in one of the exhibits, we have an exhibit called travel distance. I think it's called B4, exhibit B4. It's the travel distance. So this is demonstrating by calculation on the exhibit that for exiting an apartment building, you either have to have two things. You have to have multiple exits, like in a corridor, like a central corridor with multiple exits on both ends, like Mike Miller talked about. Or for garden style, there's an exception that says for garden style, you can just have one exit out the stairway, down the stairway to the ground. As long as you don't travel more than 125 feet, then you can get away with one exit. And so that's a fire code requirement and the IBC requirement. That's what we're using on this project, that exception that allows one exit 125 feet long. If I take the exact same building I have and just push it up even 2 feet or more, I don't meet that requirement any longer. So it's not an option to just say, you can take this project and just push it up 2 feet or more out of the ground to get your garages to work. It won't meet the code. So all of a sudden at that point, the garden style project does not work by code. So we're looking at, you can't go up with the garden style and you can't go up with the garden style in order to meet the garage access to that upper level. So it would force it down into the ground, which then becomes a problem with the aquifer. And I haven't even, so that's a 6 foot impact. The elevator is an additional 6 foot impact. So that's why in our report, we said it's between a 6 and a 12 foot impact to the aquifer, which makes that part of it infeasible.
So the idea of introducing elevators was discussed. What would happen if you added elevators to the building from a structural standpoint?
Okay, so that was the other thing we looked at. We looked at if we do create these two levels of parking garages. I mean, so I already talked about the fact that the aquifer itself makes it not feasible. But the other thing that would be a change in the project is once we add those two levels of structured parking, you wouldn't do it without elevators, and you wouldn't do it without elevators all the way to the top, right? So you no longer would be able to build the garden style on top of the garage. It would have to become, because what I just described, the travel distance no longer works, it would have to become a 65 foot wide building instead of a 39 foot wide garden style building with interior corridors, elevators all the way to the top. That's a significantly different project than what we have proposed, right? Like what we have proposed is a 4-story building that's 39 feet wide. We would now be talking about a 6-story building that's 65 feet wide. So we're trying to meet one of the design standards that says put parking under the building, but we're adversely impacting other design standards that are saying be sensitive to the neighbors in terms of massing, heights, views. And these are all the reasons why we didn't go to a six-story building that's 65 feet wide. And we went with the garden style that's 39 feet wide and four stories high. So building the garages would necessitate that not only the garages don't work, but now you're changing the whole type of project away from a garden style project. So I know the hearing examiner's comments and conditions were kind of that the project is approved, but just put the parking under the building and just push up another story. But what we are saying and what the results of our feasibility work was is that that doesn't work from a code standpoint. And so it's no longer just pushing up the same proposed garden style building. It's changing entirely what that building was to a 65 foot wide double loaded corridor building that's now a six-story building and significantly wider, 65 feet instead of 39 feet wide. And so, it wouldn't meet code to just do it with the garden style.
Well, what about Adam's, proposal to have the garden style on top of structured parking? We saw a couple examples of that.
Yes.
Why would
yes.
that work?
So that would meet code. So I think what we're referring to is that Adam says you don't actually need elevators on the four-story part of the residential part of the building. You could just have elevators come up between the garages and go up to the upper grade level and then walk up the four stories of stairs from there on up. And we're saying that that's not feasible because the market won't walk up four stories of stairs. So nobody builds a four-story garden style building for that reason. It wouldn't be leasable.
So are you saying that Adam's proposal, because I believe he proposed that, well, one thing you could do for the 125 foot travel distance is to put a balcony up on the upper stories so you could find another way down. Are you saying that that doesn't solve the problem because of the stairs?
That's right. Yeah. People would not walk up four stories of stairs.
So it wouldn't be rentable or what do you?
It wouldn't be rentable. You wouldn't be able to rent the top floor and you'd have some difficulty renting even the second to top floor.
It came up a couple times, the idea, why don't you just take a story off? What's wrong with that idea?
Well, the challenge of making projects feasible financially is, can you build enough units and get enough rent? And it's why every developer drives for more units to try to cover all the fixed costs on a project, like the land costs, the development costs, permitting, soft costs. And so what we're talking about right now is 160 units that can financially work and be viable to move the project forward. If we add parking garages, it makes it not feasible financially, and it makes it not feasible for the other reasons I said too. But if you take away units, you're just making that something that doesn't work already and make it not work even worse.
So does it exacerbate the infeasibility?
Yeah, right. I mean, we didn't look at like getting rid of units because that's it. Adding the garages to the 160 units makes it already financially feasible, not feasible. If you take away the floors, it's even worse, not feasible.
So you talked about in order to have access from grade to enter the parking garage, and because of the distance that's required between the floors in a parking garage, that it necessarily would have to push the bottom one down and thus impact the aquifer. Does widening the foundation, does that have any impact on the aquifer?
Well, the parking garage is going to have just massively bigger foundations, right? Mike said it, that the project we have is a relatively simple light frame building with relatively simple foundations. Once we go to a parking garage, again, parking garages are, the entire floors are concrete. They have massive beams, 2 feet dimensional beams. They have concrete columns throughout that parking garage. And if you have two levels of those with a four-story building on top of it, we're just going to have a massive amount of grade beams and transfer beams and concrete foundations that will be significantly bigger. They'll be wider, they'll be bigger. They'll dig deeper into the grades, both downwards and laterally into the hillside on the upper side. So the foundations will be wider, but they will be deeper as well. I mean, thicker, because they're bigger foundations carrying significantly more loads. And when, do you want me to talk now about, I mean, some of the proposals from Adams was how to offset a garden style building on top with the garages, or also to even offset two levels of garages. And Mike was talking about those and he kind of deferred to me, so I'll comment on those now. Once you start offsetting the buildings above from the garage below, we just have to introduce a lot more structure, right? Like twice as many beams and twice as many columns, because we have to have the building above come down on the beams and column lines below. So we would end up putting twice as many beams, twice as many columns, and twice as many foundations if we offset the building above, or even start offsetting the garages down below, which again, just makes it, it makes it where you're not going to build a garage for $60,000 or $70,000 a stall. You're going to be pushing $80,000 or $85,000 a stall if you start offsetting things. So those numbers that are quoted, you know, $60,000, $70,000 per stall, that's assuming traditional construction, which means everything aligns, which means everything above, the building above, aligns with the garage below, and the two structured parking, they align as well. Those are the $60,000 to $70,000 costs. Once you start offsetting it, it's significantly more because you have twice as many beams, twice as many columns, and twice as many foundations.
I'm sharing now an exhibit that I believe you were talking about. I'd like to have it up while we're discussing.
Okay. Yes.
Okay. Yeah, for the record, this is exhibit A8. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so this is the... This was our exhibit where we showed everything aligning, the building above aligning with the building below. And you can see.
Let me ask you one question first, a preliminary question. On this, you see that the Mr. Adams prepared that there's a missing foundation in lower, and it's lower than indicated. I'm looking at the uphill little box on the right hand drawing down below. And I think I understand that to say that that's a foundation that wasn't drawn on your drawing, and that actually the proposed design that we drew on the left-hand side would actually be lower, so that it's not accurate as to the impacts of the current design. Is that your understanding as well?
Well, yeah, I think he's pointing out and saying we made a mistake. We didn't actually draw it accurately, but we actually did draw it accurately. We didn't draw the foundation at that spot. We drew it down below. But if you look at our drawing on the left, we're showing the original proposed impact line going at a diagonal across the site, and it's labeled original proposed impact line. And we're showing it so that it would be at the bottom of the footing, where a footing would be on that right side below the upper level parking garage. We show that our impact line is about 2 feet down from that floor level. We just didn't draw a little footing right there. But we showed the line at the right spot that it would be 2 feet below that floor. And then we showed the impact would be, you know, probably 12 feet below that if we're counting for the elevator in order to put the structured parking in there.
All right, I just want to make sure that I'm clear on this. So you're saying that this corner of the red building on the left-hand side, on the uphill side, is the same point as the bottom of this small box, the missing foundation. Is that
what you're saying? Yes, because you can see we're showing it about 2 feet down below the actual floor line.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure that was clear. So I had a question about that.
It also shows the magnitude of this difference in the size of the building, right? I mean, quite a bit wider building and quite a bit taller building to accommodate that sort of change in the design.
And to be clear, this outline, black outline showing the bigger building, That is includes elevators, so that's the dual, what we're calling the dual corridor.
Yes.
Design.
Right. Which is the only way that feasibly works.
And so that would potentially be the impact as far as views from the end of it, be the difference between these two.
Yeah, that would be the view difference. Yeah. I mean, I see feasibly work, but I mean, it doesn't work financially feasibly and it doesn't work aquifer feasibly. But yes, if you were going to design on another site that could support those sort of rents and that you didn't have an aquifer and that you also weren't up against a zoning where we need to be sensitive to the neighbors, then that's how you would design that project. You would design four stories over the parking garage and it would be two stories higher and it would be 65 feet wide instead of 39 feet wide. That's correct.
And it seems from my reading that the appellants are proposing an central elevator dual corridor type design on this property. So it would end up looking something like that as far as mass and scale.
Whether they're proposing it or not, it's what would be sort of required once you put in the structured parking. Whether it's one level of parking or two doesn't make any difference. That's the impact of going with structured parking. Yes.
A different type. I'm going down to, because you were talking about the offset and I interrupted you, so I apologize.
So this is Adam's showing a concept of how structured parking might be possible for this project. And he's showing a 45 foot wide building. Our current design is 39 feet wide. But what I'm saying is once you have that building on top coming down and it doesn't align with the exterior walls, now you have twice as many of those 2 foot dimensional beams, twice as many of the columns, twice as many of those big, huge foundations underneath. So you're sort of creating almost twice the structure for that building. And then Mike alluded to the fact that laterally, now you got all these shear walls coming down, these lateral forces coming down in the middle of a floor. And so the beams get even bigger because we have these big beams called transfer beams. So they're structural beams that are now taking out the lateral seismic loads of a four-story building on top of it that's coming down on the middle of a slab of a parking garage or on the middle of the ceiling of the parking garage. And we have to have even bigger beams now transfer those out to shear walls on the ends or other structural elements that can get that into the foundations. So it's never done. I mean, it's not practically done because it's not generally financially feasible to do it. So it's taking something that's financially not feasible and then complicating even further to make it even more not working. So it's a picture to say I can orientate this building in these garages and I can show you how it can fit on the site without touching the aquifer, but it's not really feasible to actually build. That's why they're not built this way. Garden styles are never built over parking garages like this.
You mentioned coming in parking on the upper side and the lower side as and if not that, then it would require ramps. Was that your testimony?
That's right.
Okay, and so would this design here require ramps?
Well, this design here, again, doesn't work financially. You wouldn't put a garden style up above like that. I mean, so it doesn't work to meet code. I can't make code work with that 45 foot wide building. The travel distance is too far to get down because he's taken a four-story building and pushed it up one story. So travel distance doesn't work.
Yeah, Mr. Schutz, we're coming up to break time. Do you want to stop now or go on for a bit? What's your preference?
I don't think I have a lot, but I better take stock of that. And maybe I can cut some out actually in the course of a break. So let's do that now.
Let's come back at 2:50 then. We'll see you then.
Okay, thank you.